This is the Marty Ray Project Chats, and I'm Marty Ray, one of the hosts of this podcast. You might know me from a beard video, a prank call, or a rap song turned acoustic cover. If you're a real project, or maybe one of my three original albums as well. Regardless of how you know me now, my whole career actually started with a podcast years ago, before everybody had one and back when podcasts got no respect at all. Times have changed a little, and this is me coming back to my roots in a way. And this time, I'm bringing some friends along with me, like my co-host Jim Best, Country Music Hall of Fame steel guitar player and producer. He's a good one. Played on a bunch of legendary country music songs that you probably know, probably heard them. If you don't know either of us, thanks for tuning in anyway. I bet you'll love it. Welcome to the project. Download, subscribe, and rate, whether you love it or not. Sound supplied by Rodecaster Pro. Thank you so much, Rode. We love you. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. Let's chat. He tickled the ivories as a touring member of Toto.
Oh, I got to stop you right there.
What happened?
I didn't tickle the ivories.
Did you not?
I played percussion and sang background.
Well, let me do that. Really?
Yeah.
You didn't play the piano.
No, David Page is Toto. He's the keyboard genius behind all that music.
Let me redo that then.
Well, that's good. That's good for the interview, you know?
Yeah. Well, we're going to get to that.
Okay.
You know what? We're just going to roll with it like it is.
Well, yeah. Roll with it. Yes, sir.
He tickled the drum sets and
not the drum set. Percussion.
He tickled the bongos.
I tickled and the tambourine.
He tickled and the tambourine.
And the shaker.
And he tickled a shaker.
And I sang all the Michael McDonald background parts.
Oh.
That are on all
Michael their, McDonald.
Yeah, he wasn't available, so they hired me.
Right. Well, he was probably torn.
What about the Meraki's?
I didn't do those.
Okay, then.
Well, let me finish the intro. He tickled the percussion instruments of all kinds, and he tickled his throat while he was singing with Toto, who brought us gems like Rosanna and Africa. He's contributed to records for Randy Travis, Jody Messina, Tracy Lawrence, and Lee Bryce, just to name a few. He's a sought-after engineer at his studio, Music City Tracks, and he's a good friend of my buddy Jim Vest, so he's a good friend of me, too.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the show, Buddy Hyatt.
I'm glad to be here, and I love both of you guys. It's going to be too much fun.
It is. It's going to be good fun.
So, you played piano for Toto.
No.
And so, I realized you played a track for Brady Seals.
Yep.
Or you did something with Brady Seals.
I've done several tracks for Brady Seals. He's one of my dearest friends. All music aside, if we never hit another note, we're going to be buddies till one of us croaks.
Brady Seals is on the show.
Is he? Great.
Yeah. He's from Little Texas. You remember Little Texas?
I do.
Yeah. God bless Texas. You know?
Yeah.
He was the good-looking one.
I don't think I ever saw him.
They were all handsome, but Brady's, he's pretty.
He's pretty?
He's a pretty man.
I had to go through that myself.
Oh, tell us more.
So we start every episode with a fast five, buddy. Okay. We give you five quick questions. You give us five quick answers.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready.
I mean, they're never really quick, are they, Jim?
No.
They're never quick. It don't matter, though. Favorite movie genre?
Action.
Action. Well, I kind of figured that. You look like an action man.
I love shoot 'em ups.
Your hair stays blowing in the wind, so I see. Your screensaver on your phone.
My wife and I at the beach.
Okay. You in a bikini or?
No. And neither
Speedos?
Is she. No. No.
No?
No.
I thought
I've,
Jim,
I've never
actually,
seen him in.
You
in
know his... what? I just lied to everybody in your listening audience. I just changed my screensaver to Us in the Mountains.
Oh. Yeah. Is it just rotate seasonal? Seasonal?
You get bored of looking at the same picture over and over. But she looks so good in this picture that we took in the mountains. We went up to Gatlinburg with T.G. Shepherd and his wife.
Right.
I'm name dropping now.
I see that.
And we just got out on the balcony. And it was a beautiful fall day, and we took a picture. And now that one is the new screensaver. But the beach pic, that was there for years.
I love it. We'll have to look at those, Jim, before he goes. Yep. The two images.
I don't never change mine.
Yeah, yours is always just some old lady that you met back in the Nashville Cats days, didn't it?
No, it's picture me.
I know. I see. Oh, that ain't an old lady.
No, that's my damn titties you've been looking at.
Oh, here we go. Wow, that was those were pretty nice back then.
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember when I was in like a double D.
Yeah.
But then I lost weight.
What are you at now, cup size?
Petite.
Okay. Yeah, it's looking good.
Yeah.
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 Looking good. Buddy, your favorite actor?
Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner's a good one.
Yeah.
You kind of resemble Kevin Costner, you know, doesn't he?
That's so flattering because I don't see that, but I've been accused of that a lot.
Yeah, is that why he's your favorite?
No, because I love Yellowstone. You ever watch Yellowstone?
No.
It's a new series that he's got out about the Wild West, it's the current modern Wild West. But it's,
yeah.
Look it up. We can Netflix, and I won't go into that, but you can find it online, and you can find it on if you have a Roku stick.
Yeah.
But Kevin Costner's new series is fantastic called Yellowstone.
You know he has a band.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you should look. His band actually follows me on Twitter. Fantastic. Sure, it's not him. But it's pretty crazy. Years ago, he started a band, and they followed me pretty quickly on Twitter. I was like, they must be doing some big following spree, trying to get followers or something. But they still follow me. Look up his band.
I'll do it.
We need to try to get Kevin Costner to come record with you.
That would be fantastic.
Absolutely.
We got to try to do that, Jim.
Well, let's work on it.
We got to use all the power within us to get that to happen. Buddy, your favorite snack food?
Pop-Tarts.
Pop-Tarts. He never grew up in it. He just ate a kid. I like it, though.
I hope my doctor's not listening.
I'm surprised you didn't say Fruit Loops.
No.
Or Fruit Roll-Ups. I'd rather. That's what I meant.
No, I ain't never tried none of that.
Pop-Tarts are good.
Yeah.
Your Fruit Roll-Ups are a lot different than other people's.
Yeah, we didn't talk about them. You know, we were just nice to them when we'd run across them fruit roll-ups.
That's how they get you to take your medicine. They roll it up.
Yeah, I remember this one. It was at the bar. Well, we won't talk about that right now.
It rolled up too tight.
Yeah.
Buddy, a quick, crazy story. The craziest story from your touring days with Toto.
Okay, I'll try to make this quick because it is crazy. And I'm gonna bleep all the expletives that really make the story good. But I got a phone call on my cell phone in 1998. Most people didn't have a cell phone in 98. It was really a new thing. And I didn't recognize the number, so I answered it. And it was a British-speaking gentleman. He said, "This is Martin Cole, and I just want to know if you want a tour with Toto." And I said, "Who the hell is this?" And he started laughing. He said, "No, really, my name." I said, "I don't care what your name is. You're full of bleep
shit."
And and I gave him so much grief on the phone, he finally just said, "What's your address?" And I told him my address. The next day, I get a FedEx with 7 Toto CDs and a round-trip first-class airline ticket to L.A. So I get on the phone to my buddy David Hungate, who lives in Nashville, who was the original bass player for Toto. And I said, "All right, did you put them up to this?" And he said, "Buddy, I don't know anything about it." He said, "I hadn't spoke to those guys in 15 years. We left on bad terms." He said, "I'm out of it. I'm not any part of it." So I wrote all these numbers charts. Now, this is important to your listeners. We here in Nashville, we use what's called the Nashville Numbers System. It's a bunch of numbers instead of music notes. So I wrote all these numbers charts thinking that, as you said in the intro, that I was going to tickle the ivories for Toto. I thought, well, David's getting tired. He's probably going to quit, and they're going to let me take his place. Wrong. So I go out there with all these numbers charts, and I walk into the room, and there's no band. There's no drums. There's no PA set. There's nothing but a keyboard sitting out in the middle of the room, and there's a microphone on the other side of the keyboard pointed the opposite direction. I thought, well, this is weird. So I just kept my mouth shut, kept my little notebook with all my numbers handy. And they came all walking in out of a green room with their sunglasses on indoors, and not one of them. Well, I back up. Bobby Kimball was friendly. He came up, shook my hand, said, "Howdy." He's a Southern boy. He's from Louisiana. The rest of them just stood there and looked at me like I was from Mars or something. And Paige, the keyboard player we mentioned, he is the man behind Toto, the piano player. He sits down to the piano, and he one fingers a harmony part. You know, really beneath him. He's like totally not into this. He don't want to be there. Who's this dumb kid from Nashville? He's, you know. So he one fingers a harmony part. And I got my pencil and I wrote that down. And then Bobby Kimball starts snickering. He stands up next to the microphone and they count it off. And we sing that song. And I sang the harmony that he one fingered the part. And it was correct. All right, quick story, not so long. We did that to 2 more songs. And he said, David Pate said to me, because we did three songs in a row, choruses, and we did them correctly. There was no, oh, that's not the right note. Oh, no, you're out of tune. None of that. And I had no idea what I was there for. So he says, let me see that paper. And I handed him my notebook. And he kind of snatched it from me. I mean, not nice. He just snatched it from me and looked at it. I have to say one bad word. He said, he looked at it and he looked up at me. He said, that's that Nashville shit. You know, and I got to tell you the truth, that made me mad. And this was 20 years ago, so I was easier to anger than I am now.
What did they use?
Those guys are the best musicians on the planet. They all read staff, you know, music.
So
music staff. So they were putting down my ability to write numbers and read and sing exactly what he just played.
Immediately.
Yes. Mm. With no hesitation.
Yeah.
So when he said, that's that Nashville shit, and I jerked it back from him and I said, and I was pissed.
Yeah.
I said, that Nashville shit works for me. So he gets up from the keyboard and just starts walking away from all of us. The band's standing there. Lukather's got his arms folded. He's tapping his foot. His face is beet red because he's angry that this smart aleck from Nashville just popped off to the boss. So David's walking. Takes him a good probably 20, 30 seconds to get to clear to the other end of the room, which was the big room at the power station in L.A. It's a big rehearsal hall. When he gets to the door, he throws his hand up and says, you got the gig. And I said, what gig? And Lukather, boy, he's just ready to erupt. He says, we need a background singer. And I said, what does it pay? And he told me, and I said, I can do that. So yeah. There
hey,
you
good.
Have it. That's how I got hired with Toto, by being an asshole. So
you gotta say what's on your mind, you know.
Well, I mean, I didn't want the gig, whether they liked me or not. I just, when he told me what it paid, and I won't repeat that, it was enough that I said, sure, I'll be here Monday.
Paid pretty good, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just for a background singer, paid pretty good.
Just for a background singer, yeah. It was a red carpet, all-access rock and roll. It was the World Tour 99 that we were preparing for. This was late 98. And, I mean, it was all jets and limos and red carpet, and I didn't even have to carry my own tambourine on stage.
Mm. Oh, did you not?
I didn't know.
All you had to carry was your voice.
All I had to do was walk on, show
up. You had
up.
A tambourine tech?
Oh, yep, I did.
I'll be dead, burner.
He had somebody changing out tambourines for different songs and stuff.
If you really want a good laugh, you can go to Toto99.com and look up Yokohama 99. That's in Japan. They did a big video, and there's a lot of footage of me doing the tambourine and singing background.
I played there.
Yeah, I bet you have.
Charlie Nagatani.
Yeah.
Comes from right there, and he come to the alley. And he was talking about how much he loved the band. And, of course, we didn't have no big records. And he was important people of a little stature, you know, that cut big records and stuff. And he said, man, I want to bring you over so bad. And he had made a deal with the government, and the government built him a park out there where, I mean, the stage is 100 foot across.
Wow.
And it's all concrete. And then, like, the bottom where all the rooms are at, like bunkers. But what I remembered about it was there was two little mountain things out in front of you, because it's open air, and one of these little bitty trees that you see, you know, in movies and stuff, there the tree was on the side of that mountain sticking up. Mm. And I remember that being you wasn't with us then.
Mm-mm.
With Shalee Tennyson.
I missed that gig.
You missed that gig, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever play with Toto in Africa while singing Africa?
No. We went almost everywhere except Africa.
Surely they went to Africa at some point.
I'm sure they did before or after I was in the band, but this was mostly a European tour, former USSR, Eastern Bloc countries, and then we ended up in Japan, as we talked about, and did that big video, which is, it's still to this day, 20 years later, is a fantastic video. Obviously, Mike Porcaro, the bassist, brother of Jeff Porcaro, was in that video because he was still alive and doing well then. But we lost him to ALS disease, Lou Gehrig's disease, basically, in 2015. So,
I hate to hear that.
I love to watch the video because he was my best buddy on the road.
And which one was he?
Mike Porcaro, the bassist.
He was the bassist.
Yes.
So he was the nice one.
He was the sane one.
Okay.
Super nice. we'd get to a city in Italy and have a day layover, and he and I'd go find the best restaurant in town and sit there and just visit and eat, and the rest of the guys were out running crazy.
Now, be honest, how much drugs was involved in the tour?
I only saw them do the common everyday
cocaine.
No, I didn't see any of that. No, I did not see any
marijuana.
Marijuana hash. They did some of that in the countries where it was legal.
You mean they didn't do it in America?
They may have done it, but not in front of me.
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
Yeah, and you know, for 2 years they tried to get me to do it.
You never did smoke.
You know, y'all can turn your radios up really loud when I say this. I've never smoked a joint. I've never been high. I've never drank a beer. I've never been drunk. Now, that's not to say that I'm all that in a bag of chips. I never wanted it.
But I'm working on that.
They could not accept that I was a teetotaler. Now, of course, I will say that I was single back then, so you probably know what my other vice was.
You had a lot of ladies.
Womans.
Womans, yeah. I wouldn't call them ladies.
A lot of ladies of the night. You know, I've never smoked weed in my life.
That's great.
I've never been a drinker. I was always a designated driver. I can't say I've never been drunk. I've been drunk probably 5 times, and every time it turned out to be a night I could not remember.
Oh.
And it was not good. Like, the cops were after me all 5 times. So I knew that, and I didn't drink. I never set out to drink. It was always an occasion where I was trying to show somebody up if I was drinking, you know.
Ah.
Like, there was this one time my buddy, he had a lot of money. He got a good job, and he had a lot of money, and he says, hey, Marty, come on, let's go. I'm buying everybody's drinks. I said, you know I don't drink, so there's no reason for me to go. I said, I don't care about going. I'm tired. And they just kept on agging on and agging on. Mm. I said, all right. I said, I'm going to cost you a lot of money then on purpose. And I said, you're so rich. So I went over there and just ordered everything I could order just to keep the tab going up.
Wow.
But I didn't waste it.
Proud of you.
Ain't you, Jim?
I'm proud of you, son. You like my own son.
So, you know that there is a meme going around. I don't know if you, are you up on the memes, buddy?
I'm a meme queen.
Okay. Oh, meme queen. We got a queen in the building. We got a queen in the building, Jim. So the meme, have you seen the meme with the song Africa in it?
Is it the one where they say we're not in Toto anymore? What is it, the meme?
That's a good one. But no, this one is like where people say, walked into CVS and forgot to pick up my antidepressants because Africa by Toto was playing, and I completely forgot about my mental illness.
Oh.
Things like that. Like Africa.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, so there was a bunch of this was actually, this isn't recent. This is from, I believe, 2017. But they were huge back then. They were going around, and there was always something like, it was something to that effect where Africa healed or cured whatever it was you had. That song just made you better. You didn't need anything else from it.
That is an iconic song. And would you believe that 98% of the people get the words wrong? They think they're saying, I'd miss the rains down in Africa.
I bless the rains.
You got it. It's I'd bless. And I asked David Page one day, about 6 months into the gig, we were noodling around, and I was tickling the ivories back in the green room because he had a keyboard set up, and I was bored. And I said, what the hell does I'd bless the rains down in Africa mean? He said, it don't mean shit. It just sounded good. He wrote the song. It don't mean shit. It just sounded good.
I've had two or three big, big song writers, and I'd ask them that same question about something they put in us, and it felt good. It sounded good.
It rolls off the tongue. It rolls off your tongue.
Yeah.
I've never written anything, and that'd be the reason I wrote it, though. Personally, you know what I mean? That's crazy.
Well, you know, my problem, why I'm so big, nothing rolls off my tongue.
Sure don't. It rolls backwards.
Yes, sir.
Well, it does roll off, but just off in the belly.
Not lately, though.
Not lately.
I knew you when.
You knew me when I was 440.
I've got a picture of you and Mel Tillis.
Yeah.
And you were 440 pounds.
Yeah.
And Mel stood behind you, and all we could see was his nose.
Mm. Yeah,
and
had his chin on my head.
Yes, he did. And Mel told us that night, and he said that y'all need to love on Jim. He ain't gonna be here long. That was what, 7 years ago, 8 years ago.
It was about a little longer than that now, Bud. It was that's the reason I sold that house over there in '06.
Yeah,
and I come to this house and I started just cutting down on my bread, and then I started cooking me a turkey once a week and carrying little packages of meat. And some celery and carrots, And I got on a roll, and when I got on a roll, I found that I had a full button I'd never had in my life. And when I felt that twinge of being full, I quit, and I lost 160 pounds.
Yeah. Well, I lost 160 pounds one time, but it took a divorce to do it.
I understand, you know.
No, maybe she only weighed 150.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
She loved this part. I didn't catch that at first. I was like, you didn't weigh 160 pounds more.
No, I lost it in a divorce.
I guess you lost a person.
Yeah, I did too.
Did you?
He lost a person, but he's never had a divorce.
I ain't never had. Boy, this year I'm celebrating 60 years of marriage.
I thought you were talking about trying to act like you were 60 years old. I'm like, no,
you may no, older. I now, mean, you know, I'm almost 80. I'll be 79 in about 15 days.
I mean, you old as the hills.
Dirt. Yeah.
What was Jesus like?
You know what? He didn't talk that much until he really got on a roll.
Is that what it was?
Maybe a little hill or something where he had attention. He'd lay it off on you.
Yeah, he'd put it on you, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Walk in a temple if you're gambling. You're in trouble.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
He got his belt ready.
Yeah.
Buddy, you played on, now I could be wrong about this, but I think you tickled the ivories on a Lee Bryce song called Love Like Crazy.
Yes.
That's one of my favorite songs ever.
I love Lee. I haven't gotten to play on any of his records since, so his new producer didn't.
He must not have liked what you did.
Well, maybe not. His new producer doesn't have my number, I think.
No, that song, have you heard it, Jim?
No, I don't think I have.
It was one of his first good records. I mean,
I know Lee. Yeah,
yeah. It was one of his first records.
But it's the same. That was on the same album as "I Drive Your Truck," right?
You know, I'm gonna totally be ignorant right now. That was so long ago, I can't remember.
Well, I'm gonna tell you, I hadn't heard anything since. But those two songs, legendary. Well, like they're legendary. I gotta show them to you.
Okay.
In between breaks or whatever, okay. I got to show them to you.
Okay.
Because you're going to love it.
Not to be rude, but Vest and I have only cut about 4,000 songs since then, so I can't remember. Yeah.
We have been busy.
Yes.
And I tell you what, it's all the years that I was producing, you know, it was sat there sometimes 3 hours to get one decent track. Good musicians, but just, you know, it seemed like there's a lackadaisical thing happening. And after I got Buddy hired on to working with Shalee Tennyson, and we started our friendship up, he said, "Man, I've known you for quite a few years, know all about you, but I just fell in love with Buddy quick." And then when he started, pulling in a lot of clients to do, you know, maybe 15 or 20 songs a day, using the very best players in town, and his technique with those charts, they just don't lie. They sit down and they play you a hit record inside of 30 minutes on the outside, and that's with overdubs and everything. So I can't think past Buddy when it comes to working, and I'm talking about great work. And then Buddy loved me enough, and I love him enough that he bought a house 3 doors from me and built us a little studio to where I can go to work a lot of days on my lawnmower.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, I just ride over on my John Deere, and we go to work, But I don't do nothing without Buddy Hyatt.
Now, do you kiss him in the mouth with tongue or without tongue?
I keep trying, and I dart at him real hard, you know, but most of the time I get that dimple on the side there.
Do you?
I turn my head real quick, but I let him kiss me every now and then.
I remember the first man that kissed me in the mouth.
I know. We just talked about it. That's why I brought that up.
Fair and young. He just grabbed me by both ears, and I was in such a shock. Good job, big boy, on that steel guitar. Right in the mouth. I guess he was just thinking, I'll get this old boy's goat.
Well, he got it, didn't he?
He sure did. I didn't know what to think. That was the first round.
Did you feel a little something happen when that happened, or made you kind of question?
No chubby or nothing, no. It was just total panic there for a minute. But anyway, he was my dear friend through the years, and I sure miss him. Most of my crowd has just died off. That's all there is to it.
Now, y'all mentioned Mel Tillis. Is he still alive?
No, we lost Mel.
Isn't that crazy that he put his forehead, his chin on you?
I got a picture of it in my phone right there, and he said, "Somebody take a picture of me and Jim together and put his chin down on top of my head." And while he was getting ready to snap it, he said, "Boy, your hair sure smells good." And I had a little more hair then. And I got a chance to see Mel. He worked over at the Palace. I'd say just less than a year before he died. And I wanted to see him there at the club. There's so many people around him. I just thought, nah, I'll see him later. Got out and got in my car and started driving around the side of the building. And here he walked out down there in front of me. And a woman stopped him. And he was looking into the little convertible I see in a Volkswagen, you know. And he had to come over there. And I rolled the window down. And he looked in. He said, Jim, I thought I recognized somebody. I didn't know it was you. He said, what in the world have you done? And when I told him I'd lost that, big tears come in his eyes, and he said, I just love you, and I'm so proud of what you've done. And so I got a chance to show him a gym vest instead of 440 at 280. And he was beside himself about it. And it wasn't less than a year that I was at the funeral.
Yeah.
Now, am I mistaken, did he have a place, a show in Branson or something?
He actually had a big place out here in Tennessee, a little farm. He had one in Florida. He worked Branson a lot, but I don't remember him having a theater of his own. Did he?
I think he did.
I think he did too.
Yeah. For quite a while. I played over there with Mickey Gilley, and I remember seeing the Mel Tillis
theater.
Maybe it was just a big theater that he was appearing at often, but they had a regular thing there.
It could have been that too. Yeah. But yeah, when I was growing up, we were in Branson, like, I mean, three times a year at least. We that was a big spot for us. So I remember like Boxcar Willie's place.
Right.
And Ray Stevens had a big old theater back then. Mm-hmm. But anyway, buddy, you have a studio, which he just mentioned, and you produce over there, Jim, right?
I do nothing without him.
And it's called Music City Tracks.
That's correct.
And it's musiccitytracks.com.
No, it's buddyhyatt.com.
Buddyhyatt.com. See right there? I'm just screwing this all up, ain't I? Jim, you got to slap me around again.
No, we need to straighten that damn hat up on your head.
That's what we got to do. This is a Cowboys hat, by the way. You a Cowboys fan?
I used to be a real big Cowboy fan. I'm basically a Green Bay Packer.
Oh, no.
I have been ever since I was like 18 years old because I raced in Louisville and we didn't have no team. So a friend of mine.
What made you go so far north, though?
Well, Paul Horning. Went to play for Green Bay back in 1959, and I had met Paul, and he turned out to be one of the best running backs in the business, and they called him the Golden Boy. And so that just made me, and then after I went to work with my first boss man, Pee Wee King, he was born in Abrams, Wisconsin, 28 miles from Green Bay. And he knew the coach, and I was supposed to have met him, but never did get a chance.
So you're producing over there at Music City Tracks at
yes.
BuddyHyatt.com.
Right? Yeah.
And how long have you been engineering, and when did that come about?
Well, that came about the Toto guys got me the money to get in the studio business. After I came off tour with them, I started my own studio in East Nashville, and we called it the Fun House. That went for a while. Then I got a place downtown with a good buddy of mine, Ernie Rowell, that used to play the bass for George Jones.
Absolutely.
Ernie had the building and I had the studio, and that was Fun House number two. And in answer to your question, I got to watch some really talented engineers do what they do, and I loved it. I loved taking a song and just mixing it and making sure the kick drum is just right and cleaning all the noise out between the drums and, you know, getting the headphone noise out of the vocal. And a lot of this I've learned from Jim because he...
Oh, no. You get the best drum sound I have ever heard. Everywhere I go with our stuff. Who mixed this again?
Well, I can't take credit for that. That's mostly my engineer, Zach Allen, that does our tracking. Jim and I go downtown to big studios like Ocean Way and Soundstage and Blackbird.
And Reba's place.
Starstruck. We go down there and get the best drum sounds, the best piano, the best B3, all the best quality, and then we bring the hard drive home to Music City Tracks so Jim can ride his John Deere through the backyard and produce the vocals and the background vocals, and then he'll let me mix, and then he'll come in and tell me what I did wrong.
So have you talked about drums? I just recently worked with a guy named Wes Little. Either one of y'all know him?
I do not.
I don't.
You don't know him? He's a drummer, and he has this place at his house, and he has a studio at his house, kind of like what you have. Mm-hmm. Like, this is where everybody's moving to now. Why not, right? But anyway, he has this setup with the drums that is – the whole room is basically drum setup to record. And he has – it has to be 20 mics to record those drums. And it's the most I've ever seen. I've never seen anybody. So how many do y'all use? The typical, like, 12 or something?
Something like that. Again, that's Zach Allen, our tracking engineer. He's the real professional. By the way, he just won 2 Grammys.
Nice.
He did Keb Moe and Buddy Guy. And he's a young, he's 30-something, early 30s, and he's just a whiz at...
But it seems like you've raised him.
Well, he started out being my second engineer.
Right.
$15 an hour at the tracking room. He was the guy that was running cables. And one night we had one of our big 25-song sessions, mm-hmm. and Zach was our second. And the first engineer just decided that he didn't want to be there, and he got up and left. He said, here, Zach, you take over. And guess who's been in the chair ever since?
Brother Zach.
Yeah.
We watched him get married. We watched him have his first baby.
That's right.
Yeah.
So do you ever wish that you would have, you know, started your own band and started playing, like, touring and stuff on your own? Or is engineering your love? When you discovered engineering, did that become your new love and you love that more than playing?
I'm going to be real blunt here. I like sleeping in my own bed at night.
I like that. Yeah.
And I've got a beautiful wife and a house full of kids. I don't like the road. Now, I will go on the road with people that I love, like Jimmy Fortune and T.G. Shepherd,
yeah,
Daley and Vincent, and those kind of people. They call and need a piano player. I'll get on the bus with them. But the answer to your question is no, I don't. I've never really, other than when I was young and thought I was going to be a star. I came here to be a star, and when I saw what stars have to go through and how their lives usually turn out, I said, that's not for me. I mean, I'm not the partier. I don't drink, don't smoke, all the stuff we talked about, and I'm a homebody. I like to be at the house.
That's me. I want to be known in music, but I don't want to be a superstar because I don't want to not be able to go somewhere at some point and, you know, not be seen and not be messed with, you know what I'm saying? Because I know that's got to be the worst thing in the world to never be able to go anywhere. Can you imagine being as big as Elvis was? The biggest artist in the world.
No.
He could not go anywhere at all in this whole world, and everybody did not just flock to him. He could not escape.
Right.
So it's like, I did a show. You know who Ludacris is?
Mm-mm.
You know who? I know you don't know who Ludacris is.
It sounds like a punk band.
It's a rapper. I did a show with Ludacris and Flo Rida. There's two rappers, and it was in L.A. and I did a singing show, but it was like a TV show. But anyway, I was on there, and he said, "Well, do you feel like you have big shoes to fill being from Memphis, and that's where Elvis is from?" And I said, "I'm not trying to fill Elvis's shoes. I don't want to be that big." So then he says, "Well, how big you want to be?" I said, "Well, just right below him." You know what I mean? So. Yeah. Where I could still find a place to hide.
You can still go to Kroger without getting molested.
I don't want, you know what I'm saying? That just seems like that'd be a nightmare. People, you couldn't tell it. You couldn't, if somebody found out where you lived or something, right. It would be horrible.
It's a special talent, people that I mentioned earlier, and I'll point him out again. And he'll probably come do y'all's show if you ask him, T.G. Shepherd. He is so gracious.
Oh,
everywhere
yes.
we go. People, still, he had 21 number one hits in his career, but he's in the later years, and he just came out with a brand new album. It's fantastic. People still bother him when we go to anywhere we go. We go to a car dealership. We go out to eat. He took us to a new Italian restaurant the other night. He's so gracious to people. He'll stop eating his food right in the middle of a good hot meal and let somebody talk to him for 5 minutes while his food gets cold.
I got a funny story about that. Give validity to that. I was in Hendersonville. Me and my mom. I was driving my mom to Target or somewhere, right? And here comes this Mercedes pulling into this park, fixed to pull out, and I'm going down this way. And he stops real quick, and I go, man, that guy's in a hurry. And I said, hold on a second. I said, that's T.G. Shepherd right there. She goes, is it really? I said, yeah. I said, watch, I'm going to get him, give you a picture real quick. And I said, it'll just take one thing. And I said, I'll just say, Jim Vest is my buddy. And I said, that's all it'll take. And so I got out, and he's like, he didn't know what was going on at first.
Right.
Here's this big old bearded man coming towards the window, and I was like, hey, TG. And he goes, hey. I said, my buddy is Jim Vest. And he said, if I ever see you, to stop and tell you that he loves you. You know, and he goes, oh, I love Jim Vest and all this stuff. And I said, well, now I got him. Yeah. I said, Mama, you want a picture? He took a picture with her, and he was happy about it. And You know, I don't know if he would have been, you know, reluctant if I wouldn't have said Jim Vest, but
I doubt it. He'd probably still been just as gracious.
He loves Jim to death, but he would have given your mama a picture no matter what.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear that.
I've never seen him be rude. And somebody was rude to him one time at Cracker Barrel. I won't go into the story because I wasn't there. He told me about it. And I can't imagine somebody being rude to somebody as nice as T.G. Shepherd. And it was over a parking spot.
Mm.
You know? And don't mess with him because he is packing.
Is he always packing?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, most of these boys are now.
Maybe that's why he was reaching down when I was walking up to the car like that.
That might have been.
He was getting ready. Yeah. Do a quick draw.
I'm packing, too.
You sure are.
If he sees a mountain of a man like Marty coming at him with that big old beard, he's probably going for his gun.
I think he might have been. He started putting his hands in his... He had like a trench coat or something. Uh-huh, looked very debonair. He still got the swag, don't he?
Oh, he does.
Oh, he does. You know, he's lived the life.
I know.
He's lived the life.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have him on, buddy.
Yes, I'll make sure it happens.
And
matter of fact, we called him last night, but I didn't hear back from him.
He was at the Ryman doing something.
Oh, was he?
With Dolly Parton, yeah.
Polly Darton. I love her.
That's
to
her
death.
Twin sister, by the way, Polly Darton.
Yeah, I used to do a lot of her demos.
Yeah.
One day she asked me if I would re-sing a couple of her songs. She wanted to pitch them and said, I can't pitch them like this. So I took them home and learned the song and went back and sang them. And back then I could sing pretty good, buddy.
You sing
I was singing
now.
Every day.
Give us a little bit.
I don't even remember what the name of the song was, but...
Dadgummit.
Put him on the
anyway,
spot.
When I got through with it, I said, who in the world was that that was on there? It sounded so bad. And she said, that was Sylvester Stallone, so.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I wiped his ass off the damn record and redid her demo so she could pitch it, you know. But she and her sister both have been good friends through the years.
It's actually, plot twist, it's Jim Vest's voice in Rhinestone Cowboy. That's in that movie. We just got the scoop right here. They got the skinny on it, didn't we?
I'm a rhinestone cowboy. Yeah, it was me.
Yeah, I believe it. Buddy, have you ever mastered? You heard of Mastered for iTunes? You heard of that?
Yes.
Do you do that there?
No, I have a mastering guy that is the best of the best, and he's got almost as many gold and platinum records on his wall as Jim Vest does.
And he is he does that, though, because I heard they have to be approved and all that.
You want to the last few that I sent out had to be 16-bit 44.1. Waves, not MP3s. Mm-hmm. MP3s too, not good enough resolution. But if you want mastering done right, Benny Quinn.
Yes. Benny Quinn.
Yes.
I think we talked about that years ago, actually. You probably don't remember. It was years ago. You know, I used to have a friend that worked with you a lot. One of my first friends, other than Jim, in Nashville. His name was Ronnie Palmer.
Ronnie still works for me.
Yeah, right. I say I used to because I hadn't talked to him. I've tried to reach out to him. He won't call me back. So if he hears this, Ronnie, if you hear this, I'm mad. I'm angry.
I'm going
to
tell him.
Tell him that I called him out on the podcast.
I texted him last night and asked him to come do a session, but he's out on the road doing front of house for people like Leanne Womack.
I know he's a touring manager.
Yeah, he wants to get more into the studio thing, and I'm trying to help him do that.
Yeah, he should. He's good, ain't he?
He's really good.
Oh, yeah. I've used him from time to time, and we're good friends.
He took me to – that's when I first seen Buddy's studio downtown. It was still a house or something?
That was the Fun House number 2.
Yeah.
18th Avenue.
And Ronnie took me over there, or I met Ronnie over there, and that was the first time I'd ever actually met you before I knew Jim, and before I knew y'all had a relationship way back then. Isn't that crazy?
Well,
it's
a small life.
It's a small, big town.
It really is. Would you ever, if somebody came to you and said, I want to do a hip-hop album, would you produce it?
I would, and I would hire the appropriate programmers to get those sounds. Just like you wouldn't hire a fiddle player on a hip-hop album, you wouldn't hire, a steel on a rap album. You have to have the right ingredients. And if we have the right ingredients for whatever that type of music is, I would certainly be the guy that made sure that from start to finish as a producer that it was quality.
You'd be the man that you would connect it.
I would basically be the qu- quality control guy. I would make sure that the programmers were doing what the artist wanted them to do. And then when they did their thing, I'd make sure they were on the best mic and that the editing was clean. You know, that's a producer's job. I learned a lot of that from Best and from another guy named Ron Cornelius, who is a veteran of Nashville, also was with Bob Dylan for years playing guitar.
And a Hall of Famer.
And he's also has the same birthday as you coming up here.
Yeah, we're about 2 days apart, day apart.
February 15th, both of y'all.
That's right, February 15th.
Yeah, same exact
How old will he be?
He will be 75, I think.
Well, he's a youngin'.
What are we doing on your birthday? What strip club are
you going to? I'm not sure. I think we're going to have some kind of little meal here, maybe some turkey and dressing and stuff here at the house, and a few friends that want to stop by. And usually my birthday lasts about 2 weeks if I get out and go around anywhere, you know. And then Sunday, we was talking about going to my daughter's to watch the football game, but they ordered a new TV when it was delivered. It was the wrong one, so they don't have no big screen TV. I'm looking for them to be here Sunday, wanting to watch a football game, which I ain't got no dog in that race now. You know what? You two old boys have got something in common.
What is that?
Serious common, if I've got it right. Where was you born?
Arkansas.
Where was you born?
I was born in Memphis, but I was raised in Arkansas.
Well, I was actually born in Arkansas. Raised in California. So
I've been trying to get Buddy to let me, you know, see if I couldn't get him a new birth certificate that said Alabama. But
hey, Alabama, Arkansas, what's the difference?
Oh, really, it's really not a big difference.
I mean, you can be eight before you're seven both places.
Yeah, and you might have a cousin that's an uncle.
Uncle Daddy.
What's funny?
Uncle Daddy.
Here's what's funny. I have a cousin that is also my uncle. That's the truth.
Well,
let me tell you how it happened real quick, briefly. I don't want these people in here to think there's some inbred going on. So my...
go ahead.
Oh, they can already see that.
That's right. So my aunt, my mother's parents, had five children or whatever. I don't know how many it was. Maybe it was five. But my mom's youngest sister had a child early, right? And she was like 15. She had a baby. She had a boy. She couldn't take care of the boy. She ended up moving off. My grandparents adopted him legally. So he was my cousin because of my aunt and my uncle because of he was my mom's brother, but also her nephew.
Are you sure you weren't raised in West Virginia?
No. Is that what happens there?
That's what the folklore is.
Oh, I thought.
Well, I've got the real deal, boys.
Let's hear it.
My daddy's grandmother, I guess it was, or his mother or grandmother. Back in Alabama, when you died, they just sort of laid you out on the bed, you know, and then they stuck you in a box when stuck you in a hole. So my mother was a Vest, and her mother said, you know, said, we're not really related, but our last name is Vest, and said, you need to go over there and pay the respects. And so my father met my mother over his dead grandma laying on the bed when she come to pay respects, and they later got married. And we, you know, down through the years, we've checked to see how close we could get them, you know, but we can't get them no closer than about fourth cousins or something like that.
So you're saying
that I'm a blue blood, all the way through.
You're saying that your mom's last name was Vest and your dad's last name was Vest.
Absolutely.
You're a Vest squared.
I've got a rounded.
So you really are inbred in Alabama.
Could be. I don't remember no jaw kicking, but...
Y'all are like royalty, like the royal family.
Well, it seems like it's worked out that way, yeah.
It really has.
Your new nickname is Double Vest.
Double D.
Double V.
Yeah, double D size, double V.
Oh, Lord.
I want to ask us something, Buddy, real quick, and then I want to ask Buddy something else that you mentioned earlier before we were recording. You did some legendary covers of Beatles and Eagles with the Nashville Super Pickers.
I did.
Now, did you play piano on that?
I did.
Did you? Was you the one that orchestrated that, or
the Super Picker albums were a series produced by Billy Troy Graves, and Billy Troy's the son of Josh Graves, who was known as the King of Dobro, did all the Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs records. But Billy, in his own right, fantastic singer, writer, player, producer, he put all that together, and I was lucky to be called to play on it.
Right on. Did y'all do any touring or just the albums?
No, just put the albums out. There was an independent label that was doing novelty projects like that. We did a one called Picking on the Eagles, too, where we got to play all those great Eagles songs that we all grew up listening to and loving. It was big fun.
Yeah, so there was Beatles and Eagles, right?
Beatles and Eagles, yeah.
Yeah, and so what was the purpose of it? If you didn't tour, was it just to sell records or to see how it would sound country? I mean, was it country? What was it?
Bluegrass. A lot of it was bluegrass. Yeah. So
y'all took Eagles and Beatles songs and made them bluegrass.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've listened to what we did, but there was banjos and fiddles and mandolins and playing on those iconic songs.
Mm. I love bluegrass.
I do too. And I had a real big dose of it for the last 5 years with my buddies called Daly and Vincent. They are what we call the rock stars of bluegrass. They're members of the Grand Ole Opry, Jamie Daly and Darren Vincent. They're both dear friends of mine. And, you know, I told you I hated being on a bus.
You played with them. I've seen that.
I was on their bus for about almost 4 years. And it's only because we laughed the whole time we were out there.
Now, how much do they actually play, though? How many dates they do a year?
Man, I can't tell you exactly, but they work their tails off. I mean,
really?
They are the workingest guys I've ever been around.
So you say 150, 200 dates a year?
I would guess at least, I'd list at least 150.
Wow.
Yeah. And they
That's
do
insane.
They have a TV show. They've had a TV show on the RFD network for the last 4 years that I was on. They just did a new one that I'm not on. They did call and invite me to sing on one episode, but they have a great piano player that is full time in the band. His name's Blaine Johnson. Blaine does all their tour dates, and when he gets when his grandma's sick or something, I go take his place.
Now, have you ever worked with Ralph Stanley or the Stanley Brothers?
No, I did not get to work with them.
Have they? Daly and Vincent?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they've been doing this all their lives.
Yeah.
I did get a song recorded by Bobby Osborne from the Osborne Brothers years ago. He did record one of my songs, and that was my first introduction to bluegrass music. Was Bobby Osborne and Billy Troy. And actually, Billy Troy, that produced the Picking on the Eagles and the Beatles, is the one that got my song cut by Bobby Osborne. I don't know if you know Bobby. He's a big Opry bluegrass guy.
I don't know Bobby. You know, the thing is, I don't know a lot of the people that Jim talks about from the Opry. I know they're legends, and I should, but I don't know a lot of them. And I need to do my research and go back.
If you like bluegrass, you should check into some of those folks.
I didn't even know the Opry had bluegrass music on it.
Started that way almost, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Family bands is just gathering up around a microphone, one microphone.
Yeah,
heavy,
absolutely.
Heavy banjo.
Well, banjo, fiddle, and rhythm guitars, and no drums.
Roy Acuff.
And,
you know, Roy Acuff playing the fiddle. That's what started it all.
My old boss man brought the first drums on the stage of the Opry, and that's telling him, you ain't going to do it. But he was strong enough, he did it.
You ever heard the story about Johnny Cash and when he played the Opry that they said you can't have drums, and he didn't like that, so he put a playing card or a dollar bill around his in between his strings and his guitar when he was playing, so it would make that so you would have.
I didn't hear that, but that's interesting.
That's true, because they actually that's part of the story they tell. If you go to Sun Records, they'll tell you all about the history of Sun Records, and part of that history is that Johnny Cash did that because they wouldn't allow drums, but he was an honorary boy, so he got his drums anyway. He got his percussion regardless. Yeah. He basically did what you did. He was playing the percussion with the dollar bill or playing card.
Pee-wee brought one out there.
Pee-wee did.
Yes, sir. He didn't bring a whole set of drums. He just. When they got ready to go out there, they all shuffled on stage, and then he brought his snare, and they played. Of course, Pee Wee had a monster 8-9-piece band, you know. He had twin fiddles and accordion, steel guitar, everything, you know, that you want to make good music with.
You see, we were talking a couple episodes ago about country music, right, and how it's changed. And,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So then that goes back to my point about that is how – even then, they hated drums. It was too rock and roll or whatever to them. Well, then that changed with Pee Wee and Johnny Cash and people like that, and of course you and all those people. See, so it's gradually continues to change. We had a conversation on one episode, a really in-depth conversation about country music now as opposed to it then. He doesn't like country music now, which is understandable. But I was telling him, I was like, well, there's always been an older generation that didn't like the state of country music now, or any music now, whatever the genre is, and it'll always be that way. So the genre of country, the people that listen now will probably hate the music in 20 years of country music. You see what I'm saying?
Mm. It's highly likely, but I can't imagine it getting any worse.
Oh, no. Well,
did I just say that out loud?
Hey, you did, and the whole world's going to hear it.
If I hear another tailgate, dirt road, finger snapping.
This is a green tractor.
This is the heavy on the. But like I was saying last time, that's what sells records, and the young people like it. So, and the young people are the ones that buy records.
Oh, now we had some thumb snapping back in there when we made great music, you know. And trailers for sale or rent.
Yeah.
And they snap. Room, I can't snap my fingers no more. Too tender. Mind me, don't do that. I got a question for you. I know you worked with the super pickers, but was you a super picker? Did they give you a piece of paper that said you was a super picker?
No, they didn't.
Yeah.
That's a heck of a note.
Well, they did pay me, though.
That's wonderful. I've got one upstairs.
Yeah, but that money's gone.
Yeah.
But you could already, you could have that paper forever.
It's been gone.
You know what we're going to do, Jim? We need to go get some, go to Kinko's, print out a paper that says he's a super picker.
You know what? I am. And I have one upstairs. And we'll white out my name on it, and we'll make one.
We'll put Buddy Hyde on there.
Because there's just a handful of us that have them.
Now, I got to be honest, guys. I'm not a super picker.
Yeah, hell, you ain't.
No, I'm not a super picker, but I do have a good ear, and I know who to hire. I know who to surround myself.
Buddy.
Well, they hired you.
You're like me. You're always giving other people credit.
It's too modest.
But I'm telling you right now, the whole damn world, y'all's ass need to listen. That's one of the best singers. That's one of the best players. That's one of the best writers. And he's a hell of a producer. And when he charts something out, it's money. And you can go in and just play it immediately because of everything he does. He puts himself into it, and it's right. He will not stand for less than that. And that's why, you know, I'm so hard on me. I don't think I ain't hard on him, and I don't have to be because now he's showing me the way. I'm on his coattail now.
Would you kiss him in the mouth real quick?
I got this microphone up my damn nose right there. My nose is running, and it's funny me reaching that far. Let me clean my nose up.
Yeah. And I hadn't had a Tic Tac yet this morning.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Jim don't mind. He lets his dog lick him in the mouth and stuff.
No, my dog does not. He licked me on the end of the nose right there. That's why it's shiny and clean.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Sure enough. It is.
I am not embarrassed to admit that I kiss this man every now and then. I hug his neck every time I see him. Every now and then, I'll kiss him on the jaw.
Yeah. T.G. Shepherd kisses me on the jaw. A lot of men kiss me on the jaw.
He brags about a lot of men kissing him all the time. I know how. He's proud of it. I lick him in the forehead.
I bask in the love that heads my way. I love it. And the people, they're so wonderful. And the things that they've done, if they take a minute out to hug me, that means I'm special, too.
Ain't nobody in here that don't want to hug you, Jim.
I want to tell Marty real quick. I'm not blowing smoke up your dress, but this really happened. Talking about people that love Jim and go out of their way to do stuff for him. One night, I colluded, as everybody likes to call it. I colluded with Lori Morgan, and she's a good buddy of mine, and she was going to be on the Opry. So I said, hey, I'm going to bring Jim Best with me. Is that okay? She said, you better bring Jim Best. Because he used to get her up on the bandstand when she was a teenager and get her to sing with the band and all that. So we got him a seat, you know, those pews behind the band at the Opry on stage.
Yeah.
We got him front and center and got him a seat. And she got, I was playing piano for her that night. I was filling in for her piano player. She stopped after her first song and got the spotlight put on Jim and introduced everybody to Jim, to the world, and said he's the guy that played on Take This Job and Shove It and all this big hits that he's played on. And, you know, stars like that, they don't share their glory very much.
They really don't.
Yeah, that's their time on stage.
Mm-hmm.
But for her to do that, that really made me think wonderful things about her that I already thought wonderful of her. But wasn't that sweet for her to do that?
Very, very sweet. I'll tell you a funny story that I have about Lori Morgan. Years and years ago, when I first set out to be a musician to start a career, I was going to every show I could go to meet people, to try to, you know, you think that by handing your CD that you've just put your heart and soul into, that's really going to get you somewhere. It really doesn't. But the stories that come are great, right? I got stories of B.B. King, who was would blow your mind. It says he was the greatest guy on the planet. B.B. King and Tracy Lawrence. And at the time, I didn't know Jim, or I would have mentioned his name. But I did know Jim when I met Lori Morgan and Pam Tillis. And they were doing a show near me, and I went to it, and they were at the thing signing. And I had this like five-song EP, the first thing I'd ever done. No fans, not a fan in the world. And I handed that album to her, and I said, hey, my buddy's Jim Vest. He said, listen to this.
Little name dropping. It goes said, a long way.
She said, oh, I definitely will. She said, you tell Jim that I said hi, and I love him. And I could tell just from that just by bringing his name up, just from that, there was genuine love in her eyes. Mm-hmm. She never listened to my album, but Pam Tillis did.
Oh, okay.
Pam Tillis did, and she said, I listened and I loved your music. And I was like, thank you so much for saying that. Same thing happened with Charlie Daniels. Charlie, I gave my thing to Charlie Daniels. You think that they're never going to listen, but some of these people actually do. Charlie Daniels actually tweeted years ago when I gave him my album. Again, I had no fans at all. He tweeted out and said, Marty Ray Project, I listen to your music. It rocks like that, you know.
We'll get Charlie on the show.
Have to. I got to bring. Yeah, I got
to ask Pam Tillis and Lori. Yeah, we'll talk.
I want to ask Lori why she never listened to my music.
Maybe we don't need to get her on the show then.
She's living down in Florida now, so it might be tough to get her up here in your living room.
We can do phone call.
We did Vanilla Ice right there on the phone.
Yeah, Jim has a story. I want to make sure he's accurate about it. Y'all were on the boat, and he had a little problem. Tell the story.
I can verify this.
Don't hold nothing back now.
Okay. Well, we were on. He and I had a pontoon boat together, and we used to always go out there on a nice day, just the two of us. We could take some bologna sandwiches, a couple of cold drinks, and he would drive, and I would just sit there and let the wind blow in my hair. We got way on off up the river past Jim Vaughn's place right there by where Reba's place used to be.
Yeah.
And I looked back, and he had this look on his face. Jim had this look on his face like he had a pain. Mm. Like he was, and I thought, uh-oh, you know, he might be having some kind of medical issue. And that look on his face, and I said, Jim, you all right? And he says, yeah, but I got a shit. And I said, I tell you what. I said, I'll drive, and you hang it over the side.
Oh,
and
no.
I'll be danged if he didn't do it. And there wasn't a boat within a mile. I mean, it was just us. And so I'm driving, and I got my blinders on. I'm not looking, you know. And he's back there doing his business, and he gets finished, I hand him paper towels, and he gets his britches up. And, I mean, no sooner than he got his britches up, and there was 15 boats around us.
Yeah. When I tell the story to other people, I'm going to tell it like there was a ton of boats around. You were at the marina. You had it over. Your buddy's leaving the marina. You're leaving a trail of, poo-poo behind you. And the people are yelling and screaming. And y'all are like, we're out of here. And that's how I'm going to tell it.
He was chumming the waters.
Chumming, yeah. I left a trail of chicken and dumplings. I mean, for about a quarter mile.
You know, I told that story at his Jim Vest Appreciation Concert in 2013 to a packed house at 3rd and Lindsley. I don't know how embarrassed he was. I know Miss Helen probably was really embarrassed.
Oh, she was under the table the rest of the show, you know, yeah.
Do you know that was in 2013?
Yes, it was.
I signed that. I was there.
Oh,
fantastic. You didn't know that, did you?
I didn't, but
yeah,
I was too busy focusing on him, make sure his night was perfect.
No, I didn't. Yeah, I didn't see you there at all because I didn't see. All I seen, I seen Jim, and that was it. And I seen, you know, the people singing. I think
Joe Stampley,
Georgette Jones sung there, and
her husband played steel.
T.G. Shepherd
had four. Yeah, well, T.G. helped put the.
Yeah.
He started it. He wanted to do this, and asked them if they might come. Well, yeah, not only will we come, but what can we do to help?
Yeah, they helped us promote. Yeah,
he and his wife jumped just right in to help Bud out. Of course, they love him, you know.
T.G., Kelly Lang is his wife. She was a big part of helping promote that.
We should do that every year. We should have a day every year that we do a Jim Vest appreciation somewhere.
Well, he wanted me to have some of my flowers, you know, while I'm alive to smell them and appreciate the people that come to love me. I don't know how to say this because it sounds weird, but I get calls every day, and some of them from other countries. about people telling me, you know, you did this or you said that, and I've never forgot it, and I love you. And when you're in this body, you know, you're sitting here trying to figure what you're going to do with the rest of your life, you know, and you sort of feel alone until you realize that thousands and thousands of people have touched their lives. And it makes you feel good when they do something like that and bring you what up to where you're really where your status is at.
Well, your status was already up there. We just wanted to make sure everybody knew it.
Yeah, but I'm the very one that does not know it most of the time.
You better know it.
He's talking about in his own mind.
In my own mind, yeah.
Yeah,
you mean you're not a legend in your own mind?
Oh, no. No.
Well, that's a sign of a legend most of the time.
Exactly.
But all my life has been lived with legends.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, those people that came there that night, I mean, who else in this town could get all of the A-team, and I mean A-team, not just good musicians, Brent Mason, Lonnie Wilson, Bruce Watkins, Duncan Mullins, Mike Johnson.
Steel players.
There was five, including you, five steel players on one stage, Joe Spivey on fiddle, Steve Henson, Scotty Sanders, and Georgette's husband, Jamie Lennon. You know, I'd never heard him play.
And Chip and Billy Davis singing background.
Right. So you couldn't get a better band. Mm. You'd have to be in a studio and be paying master scale to get that band. But when they heard what we were doing, not one of them would let me pay them, not one. And Brent even paid his own cartage.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. So.
See, I mean, how do you not understand the magnitude of your career? Something like that.
I think it's just some little syndrome in there that says, you know, you're not, you know, just don't outgrow your britches. I guess I heard that from my mama always growing up and everything. And I've done so much more than I can take time to think about sometime. And I have never thought about. I never really liked my playing, although we see what it's done. And I've never, you know, cared about nothing about being a singer. And here at 75 or 80 years old.
We started when you were 75.
75, yeah. And we're about to finish now at 80, or 79, an album, which I started just to leave something with me singing for my kinfolk that I got left, which is a few cousins. And then another friend of ours that we just lost, Dan Mitchell, who wrote monster songs like If You're Going to Play in Texas, You Got to Have a Fiddle in the Band. Alabama, and just song after song like that. And one day he showed me in his phone, and he said, here's how I think of you. And it said, Jim Vest, legend, and my phone number. And I have never forgotten that. And when he heard what I was doing, I reluctantly played a thing or two for him, like I reluctantly played something for you, you know. And he went crazy about it, and he said, no, the world's got to hear this. So he's really been pushing me, and then he died this past year about, what, 7-8 months ago?
It was sudden.
Yeah, so I'm on a tear, and Buddy's got his foot up my butt to get this finished, and in a large way, even though he's dead, he's got a lot to do with what we're doing right now, trying to finish this. And we're going to get a hold of Devin O'Day. We got three ready that he's mixed good, and we're going to have a little date with her, played on WSM, see what they think.
It's good to be modest when you're young, right, and all through, but when you get to the accolades that you've achieved and your age, I think it's time to be proud.
Well, I had the opportunity, you know, twice with CBS to be an artist if I wanted to be, and I turned it down both times. But I enjoy you was talking a while ago about being able to go to a restaurant. A lot of times I go to a restaurant and there's somebody that come by and try to say hi. You know, but not nothing that bothers me, you know. But I enjoy the fact that I know and have a status with some of the biggest boys that's ever been in music, you know, just Paul McCartney.
Mm-hmm.
And that I get to enjoy that old country boy, laid-back fat boy, you know, without all the hassle and I really enjoy that. So I get lackadaisical in that position, I guess, is what it is.
That's why it's good. It's a great thing that you're writing a book. It's phenomenal because your stories are vast.
I have got, boys, the first 100 pages, and it's got some things wrong, this, that, and other, but I'm reading it now.
That's the first chapter.
And, it's about the first three or four chapters. We're going to try to have about 200 pages, and then I've got about enough pictures with, you know, me and Waylon when neither one of us had a band, Willie when he had a burr haircut, and George when he had a flat top, and we're going to fill up some, you know, like the bottom part of a page here and there to where we will put another 100 pages of pictures in that we've got. And they're all black and white, boys. They're all black and white.
Right on. Well, it's been a great show having you, buddy, and it's always a pleasure talking to you, Jim. We end every show with an unbelievable fact, usually, but this, since you were involved with Toto, I wanted to ask you, because I did some research, I wanted to ask you, do you know what the name Toto means?
It absolutely means nothing. I asked them myself, and they said it was easy to remember, and it looked good on paper, and they all agreed on it, and it has nothing to do with the Wizard of Oz.
Well, in 1988, Jeff Porcaro, is that right?
Jeff was one of the founding members, the drummer.
He said the name Toto actually comes from the Latin term totus, which means totally everything. And that's what we're trying to do, play music which contains all of the genres we love. So either he made that up then.
He made it up because I asked David Page, and David Page is Toto Inc. And David Page just, unless David just didn't feel like answering me, he told me it didn't mean a thing.
Yeah, well, you know, you sometimes you do something. Have you ever written a song, and when you write it, it means something, and it starts to mean something else to you as you get older? Have you ever done that?
I don't think so.
No? That's happened to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You write songs too, right?
I do.
A monster, man. What's the last, that one thing that one of your songs, right? How many have cut Hello to Heaven?
Let's see. It started out with Bobby Osborne back in 98, and then it's been cut by Kenny Rogers, who did not release it, but I do have the master recording that Kyle Denning sent me that he recorded of it.
Yeah.
It's on Daryl Singletary's last record before he passed away. David Frizzell has had it out as the theme song for Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, because if you hear the song, you'll understand what the correlation is. Sammy Kershaw cut it. Colin Ray cut it. I'm leaving somebody out here. T.G. Shepherd. It's on T.G.'s newest album.
Yes, sir.
Of course, being a co-producer with T.G., I kind of strong-armed him.
Not too much. But it's a wonderful song.
He cut two of my songs because that's how belligerent I was.
Yeah. I'll play it for you sometime. I got copies around here someplace.
Yeah, I want to hear it. I can't wait to hear what you've now completed. I've heard a couple of your things, but now I want to hear more. Anyway, thank you so much, buddy, for coming and being, buddy. And we want to have you back on soon. Right, Jim?
Absolutely, my dearest friend.
Well, if I didn't live so far away, I mean, you know.
Yeah, it'd be easier.
Yeah, it's an airplane ticket every damn time.
Three doors down.
That's a band. You ever heard of that band?
I have.
Yeah.
Rock and roll.
I have too, believe it or not.
You've heard of Three
Doors Absolutely.
Down?
Hey, Jim's got a lot of great friends, but I bet he don't have another friend that bought a house in his neighborhood just so it could be close to him.
I guarantee he don't.
No. Uh-uh.
Well, you do now.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, Marty Ray. Thank you, Jim Best.
Thank you, buddy, for being with us. Marty, for you bringing this old boy out of the damn dark ages to do something like this.
Man, it's my honor.
Mine too. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, man, another one down, another one in the books. Sorry for the delay on this one, the coronavirus and tornadoes here in Nashville has affected us and has kind of put a delay on things, but we're still creating content. We're still putting out content. Thank y'all so much for tuning in, for subscribing and downloading and following and rating and reviewing and sharing. We appreciate it. Thank you, Jim, for doing this show with me. Thank you, Buddy Hyatt, for coming on and telling us all about Toto, all about your studio and your process. And thank you, Rode, the Rodecaster Pro. God bless you.